All right, it is so good to see all of you out there. This is, you've had one lesson under your belt now. You've had a little more time to get alive. Last year I had that first session and I saw the glazed look in your eyes. You look much more alive at 10 o'clock than you do at 9. Really appreciate you guys being here. I really do. You know, you have so many things you could be doing right now. And you prioritize this above it. I know there's people here who have jobs. But ask to be off today so that you can be here today because you prioritize this higher. There may be people who are giving up all kinds of things, all kinds of activities today. I know several of you, if you wasn't here right now, would you still be asleep or at least lounging and crashing at home? Of course you would. You know, this is the one day of the week you don't have something that you go from the time you get up to the time you go to bed. And you chose to prioritize this weekend above. Well, they said that they matched the speakers to the topic, and let me tell you the real reason why. They decided I needed the most work in this area, so if I study it more, then I can actually get a little bit better at it. So, we're going to be talking about loving God through obedience today. Now, that song we just sang, "Blessed are they who do His commandments." That's really what this is about. That's what today is going to be about. Our key verse for today and for our study is, "Now by this we may know that we know Him if we keep His commandments." You know, John has this amazing way of, everything's almost fatherly with John. If you phrase that appear over and over again, "little children, my little children," the mother hen is bringing her little children under the wings. But John, and again, John will go, "my little children," he'll go on to say something. But throughout this, I wish I could put the phrase together that Darren did last night, something about if we want to know how to know Him, we could study the book on 1 John because that's how you know Him. Something like that. I'm not exactly sure how he worded it. I got lost somewhere right after he got to discrete math. But if we want to study about knowing God, that's really what this is. Steve put in the lesson that in the brochure about this that the Gospel of John is about getting to know Christ and bringing one to Christ. And then, if that was a college class, that would be, Christ 101. And the first, second, and third epistle of John is kind of like, Christ 102. Or maybe 401 in college, right? This is where it starts becoming not about how to become a Christian, but once you're a Christian, how to live your life. And one of the amazing things about John in chapter 2, picking up in about verse 12, again, this time, this "my little children" in John chapter 2 and verse 12, when he says, "I write to you, little children, because your sins are forgiven for His name's sake." This time, I think he's actually talking about spiritual age. And he groups three groups. The little children. "I write this to you, little children, because your sins are forgiven for His name's sake. I write this to you, fathers, for you have known Him who is from the beginning." The spiritually mature. The fathers of the groups. And then I write this to you, young men. Right. Not just men, not leaving the women out, but I think of this as the spiritual ages, the little children. And we probably have some in here that have not been Christians more than weeks or months. Matter of fact, I know we've got some in here that haven't been Christians more than weeks or months. And that's fine. John is for you. This book is for you. To those little children who's just learning the walk with God. Now, but John also writes to the young men. Got a little experience under their belt. If you look down in Route 13 and 14, "because you have known from the beginning, and I write this to you young men, because you are strong, and the Word of God abides in you, and you have overcome the wicked one." Who's the wicked one? Satan. All right, make it at least pause away. Three things are said about the young man here. Probably the majority of the people in the room, your age to mine, right? Three things that said. One, you're strong. You're here today. You're strong. The Word of God abides in you. That's what we're talking about right now. Does the Word of God abide in you? And third, victory. You've overcome the wicked one. Whether you're the young child and you have been saved, whether you're the young guy who's strong and energetic and going forward, or whether you're the father. And this is the spiritual father. I won't say look to the back. Before I say that, though, I'll say this is the spiritual fathers. The elders, those that are older spiritually than us, they've known God from the beginning. Right? You have those three different spiritual ages, and guess what? It encompasses most of the people in this room. The only ones that wouldn't be encompassed by this is the ones that haven't made the decision to follow Christ. That's the only person that John is not writing these things to. And one of the things we talked about over and over this weekend is confidence. That's what this is about. By this we may know that we know Him. What does that know that we know Him? What is that a good way of saying? We can have what? Confidence. We can know that we know God. We can be confident. We don't have to run around, oh, I think I'm good enough. I think I've done enough good things. Maybe I'll make it. No. You can know that you know Him if you keep His commandments. And that's what we're going to talk about for the next hour. Now, one of the things I hear a lot of is, okay, I'm a Christian, and as long as I don't do this, okay, as long as I don't drink, as long as I don't smoke, as long as me and my girlfriend, we've made a decision, we're going to stay pure until we're married, okay, we're pure. I'm not drinking, I'm not partying every weekend. As long as I've got all these lists of don'ts checked off over here, and maybe it's doctrinally, maybe there's these lists of, here's the things I believe, here's the things that I don't believe, and I got all the right do's checked off, and I got all the right don'ts checked off, but okay, good, everything's good. It is so much more than that. First, and John is making the point over and over again, we know that we know Him because we're like Him. And we looked at 1 John chapter 2 and verse 3 just a minute, but we may know that we know Him if we keep His commandments. Now look down in verse 6. He who abides in Him ought to himself also walk just as He walked. What does that sound like? Does that not sound like imitation? If we know Him, if we're a Christian, we should walk as He walked. And I promise Gary, I will not get into his next class, into loving our brothers. But guess what? If we're going to walk like Christ walked, what did He do when He came across people? He saw their need, and He filled that need. Right? There is so much more to being a Christian than just having a list of, I'm not going to do this. That everything is fine is like, I don't do this, and I don't do this, and I don't do this. So what I want us to think about when we think about this, Paul time and again, 1 Corinthians chapter, he actually says it a little bit before that, in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, where he's talking about his parental love toward them, right? You've got plenty of people that's going to teach you the gospel, and he talks about this parental love that he has for them, and then he says, imitate me. But he goes on in the next verse when he says, imitate me. Therefore, I urge you, imitate me. For this reason, I have sent to you Timothy, my beloved and faithful son in the Lord, that he will remind you of my ways in Christ. And what does he say? Obviously, in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, imitate me as I do what? It's an easy question. It's even a cheat sheet. It's on the board. Imitate me as? All right. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul says it a little bit different. Be ye imitators of God as dear children. And we can look at 1 Corinthians 4:16, Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 12, very similar point made there, and 3 John chapter 1 and verse 11. This concept comes over and over and over again. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. Or just cut out the middleman and imitate God. Is what he says from time to time. So that is as if I'm looking in a mirror. Sounds like James a little bit, doesn't it? I look into the mirror, I'm looking in the perfect law of liberty, and I see Christ back. Right? But even better, when I walk out into the world and people see me acting the way I act, doing what I do, being who I am, who do they see? If I'm truly imitating Paul as he imitates Christ, or cut out the middleman of Paul and imitate God as your children, if I'm imitating Christ and I am obeying God as I walk day in, day out, when people look at me, what do they see? They see Christ. How awesome is that? That you can be used in such a way that when people see you, they see Christ. Now, when you see a small child, everybody's seen it, right? A man's walking down the street, and he puts his hands in his back pocket, and here's his little son. What's his son going to do? Well, put his hands in his back pocket. Is that son saying anything about himself? No, that son's saying, see this guy? I love this guy. I want to be that man. I used the example a few years ago, Michael Jordan, be like Mike. They have to come up with a song about LeBron for you guys to understand what I'm saying. Be like LeBron. Be like Mike. Best basketball player in the world. When I was running around, this skinny kid, believe it or not, at that time in my life, I was a skinny little kid, running around in the backyard, trying the exact same shot over and over, tongue stuck out on the right side of the mouth. As I turned, I would do that layup. Boy, I tried over and over and over. What was I trying to do? I was trying to be like Mike. Was anybody going to look at him and go, hey, look at him? No, I wanted people to look at him and go, oh, that looks like the guy that's really good. Michael, that's what I want to see out of you guys. Every one of you have the potential. I want when people see you. And being here today is a good start to it. What did you spend your Saturday doing? I spent it in the Word. That's being like Christ. And that's what it is. When people see you, do they see Christ? So the first major takeaway I want you to take away today is when people see me, are they seeing Christ? Am I imitating Christ as I go through the world? Now, the next thing is I want you to imagine for a minute that here's this guy, right? It could be anybody, right? But here he is, and if you know the person, just keep it to yourself, okay? Here he is, and he's walking around, he's got his arm around this girl, and he looks over his shoulder and says, hey honey, I love you, you're the only woman for me. Anybody gonna believe that? Would you believe it? Why wouldn't you believe it? Somebody help me. Everybody's smiling like, no. There's no way I'm going to believe this guy is going to say, hey, you're the only woman for me. Why don't you believe it? That's right. His actions in no way bear out the words coming out of his mouth. There's no resemblance between the words coming out of his mouth and the actions that he's doing. All right. Everybody see, this is an easy example, right? Is there anybody here that believes he means it? That he truly means it when he looks over his shoulder. Look at the smile on her face. Yeah, I got him. I've got him. Look at, the picture kind of cuts out, but you can see the smirk on his face as he goes, honey, I love you. You're the only one for me. I want you to believe that. There's no one here that would believe that. Why? His actions. So that's the second major thing that I want you to make sure you don't go away with anything else. Go away with two things. When people look at me, do they see Christ? When they see the actions I do, if they mimicked me, like Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. If they imitate me, would they be imitating Christ? No glory in that for you, right? The only glory in that comes to the one that we'd all be imitating, which is Christ. So first, if they see me, are they imitating me or would they be imitating Christ? And secondly, when they see my example, does my actions match the words coming out of my mouth? Now, Steve asked a question last night, so I won't ask you to re-raise your hand. But he asked the question, how many guys in here are Christian? Almost every hand in the room went up. If I was to ask a very similar question, how many of you, by this we know that we know him, which means by this we know that we're Christian, or you say you love God. If I was to ask how many people in the room, do you love God? I think every hand would go up. Right? I'm not even putting anybody on the spot, but saying, is there anybody who would think the opposite of that? But you don't love them. So, with that being said, there is a sobering comparison in 1 John that I want us to think about for a moment. If I was to say, what's the greatest commandment? Jesus was asked that on there's three different accounts in the Gospels of Jesus being asked the greatest commandment. The first one in Matthew, you've got the scribes that's trying to trick him, right? We're going to get him this time. We're going to make him pick one of those commandments, and as soon as he picks it and elevates it above the other, we're going to say, why is that one so important? How many of you from memory can tell me, what was his answer? What's the greatest commandment? Jesus, what is the greatest commandment? Somebody will help me? A little bit louder. That's right. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Boy, easier words, easier said than done. No part of yourself that you leave back for yourself. Love the Lord your God with everything you've got. All your heart, all your soul, all your mind. It becomes your controlling factor. Everything I'm doing with Him in mind. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid on the playground, you want to hear some fighting words? Let one kid walk up to another kid and do something, call him a liar. Are you calling me a liar? Has everybody heard something said about that kind of disdain? What is John saying? Everybody reads John. 1 John chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. And I got to get there myself. 1 John chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. Take a second and look at those verses. Verse 3 is one we've been looking at. If we say we know Him, we'll keep His commandments. Right? That's how we know that we know Him. We can have confidence if we know Him, if we keep His commandments. Verse 4, I say to he who says, I know Him, and does not keep His commandments, is what? A liar. Whoa. I don't know about you. But those words, even as an adult, when I get into a conversation with somebody, and it actually comes full circle, and I'm realizing they're saying the only conclusion to what they're saying is that I'm lying. Feathers ruffle up. Am I different? Is everybody kind of the same way? Once it comes to the conclusion, what you're saying to me is I'm lying? Well, if I go out and I answer that question, yes, I'm with you. I love God. And I go out, and every day of my life, and my actions in my daily life does not reflect Him or does not show that I love Him. What does it make me? It makes me a liar. I might be the only person that knows that. But in my heart of hearts, I know whether I'm a liar. That's sobering. Now, when he said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And the second is likened to it. Somebody finish that for me. Love your neighbor as yourself. And you know what? He was to go down, chapter 4 and verse 20. There's another one of these liar comments that John makes here in chapter 4 and verse 20. If one says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a what? Liar. If you want to know whether someone knows God, watch how they treat their brother. Right? Siblings included. Just go ahead and make that clear. I see a lot of siblings in the room. Yes, Hayden, Megan is included in that. But more than that, how do you treat the person across the aisle from you? How do you treat the person that you're with day in and day out? The person you work with? If someone says, I love God, but his actions with his when he's with his brethren shows different. He's what? A liar. To me, those are sobering words. Those words that bring me down out of the clouds back to reality and say, look at yourself in the mirror. And how do you stack up? How do you compare? And I hope they'll be sobering words to you. I hope nobody in here is a liar. But the good news about 1 John is in chapter 2 and verse 1, if we sin, we have what? An advocate with God. So if you find, in fact, as you look at yourself in the mirror and you examine yourself, and you say, hey, look, you know what? John just called me a liar. And it hurts, but I can't deny it. The great thing about the book is there's something that can be done about it. It's not, you can go back to confidence. All is not lost. Does my actions, my obedience, equal my words? I know Him. I love Him. Do they equal? This has been the same from the beginning. When you say the greatest commandments, when people started looking at what Jesus said about the greatest commandments, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, one of the people actually made the point that, you know, in this is summed up, actually Jesus makes it too, in this is summed up what? All the law and prophets. Very good. In this sums up all the law and the prophets. If you was to look at the Ten Commandments, the first four, love your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. 5 through 10, love your neighbor, love your brother. Might be your parent, might be your physical sibling, it might be the person next door, but love them as yourself. Don't murder them. Don't kill them. Don't look on their spouses with lustful eyes. Right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Now, this has not changed from the beginning. I will be your God if you will be my people. Those of you who haven't, do a keyword search. We all love our technology, right? Go search for I will be your God if you'll be my people. And you will find this as a theme throughout the Old Testament scriptures. Don't take my word for it. But that whole concept, I'll be your God if you will be my people. You may know that you know Him if you keep His commandments. right? He hadn't said anything different than he said in Leviticus. He's not saying anything different than he said in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. If you remember those passages where he spends one chapter in one or a few verses in one saying, if you will obey me and keep my commandments, blessed will you be in the city, blessed will you be in the country, blessed will be your kneading bowl. Everything you have will prosper. But if you don't obey me, cursed shall you be in the city, cursed shall you be in the country, cursed shall the fruit of your body. Everything. And he spent a lot more time on the cursings. Why? Because we're hard-headed people. We need to be reminded more of the consequences than the blessings. But if you will obey me, these blessings are everywhere. But if you don't obey me, the cursings abound. This is the same concept, and it's been here from the beginning. And then it's repeated here in our study today in 1 John chapter 2, 5 and 6. But whoever will keep his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. And he knows that we are in him. And by this we know that we are in him. Once again, confidence. We keep his commandments. We know that we're in him. We know that we're saved if we keep his commandments. There is no reason for going through life in doubt, in fear, in depression. We can know that we're in Christ. But the other thing that's there, truly the love of God is perfected in us when we learn to do this, when we learn to put his ways above our own. And I originally had asked, and you can answer in your workbooks at a later time, but for time I've kind of whittled it back some. Think through and write down some examples through the Old Testament scriptures and the New Testament scriptures. What in the New Testament, someone whose words don't match their actions, there's a name that Christ gives to that. And what is it? Hypocrite. Very good. I'm glad I can read lips. Hypocrite. Another flattering word, right? Everybody in here just loves to be called a hypocrite. About as much as love to be called a liar. This is the word that was given. Does our actions match our words? But the good thing, 2 John chapter 2, verse 1, we can fix it. We have an advocate with God the Father. And when you get home today, I want you to thank your parents. We're going to actually start talking about now about how this obedience came about. How do you think we learned to obey? Did we just pop out into this world going, okay, I understand this whole concept of obedience? No. Some are still trying to work on it, right? There are days I'm still trying to work on it. But we're taught this from a very young age, and it started with one of the most simple two-letter words that your mama ever knew. What was it? No! Don't touch that stove. No, don't touch the hot fireplace. No, don't play with that knife. No, don't throw your sibling off the balcony. Whatever it might have been, that word no. Now think back to the two-year-old. What was the word no immediately followed by from the child? Why? No, you can't do that. Why? Okay? Does it make sense to me? From the very beginning, and let me tell you something, you probably don't remember this, but when you first started asking that question, why, your parents probably at the very beginning started going through great detail trying to explain to you all the reasons in life why the physics of that hot oven is going to burn you if you touch it. But after some time, what did that get shortened to? Because I said so. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. When I was growing up, by the time I was your age, when I have kids, I will never say, what? Because I said so. How many in here have said that? I will never tell my kid because I said so. Really? There's more honest people here than that. There we go. The hands are beginning to go up now. How many of you heard it? Multiple times. More than once. All right. There you go. Most of you hard-headed like me, you heard it a bunch of times, right? No. Why? Because I said so. Thank your parents for that. Now, one of the biggest problems that's going on when you see your peers among you out in the world, their parents was like me and said, I will never repeat that to my kid, and they kept that promise. And we're going to talk in just a minute what this grows into. Right? But when your parent, when your mom or your dad, no. Why? Because I said so. First, you have to get over the pout. Okay? Because what you're wanting me to do doesn't match what I want to do. Right? That is red. And I don't care if red means hot. Red needs touching. Right? Red needs touchy. Or whatever it may be. The sibling needs throwing off about them. They just need it. Right? That word no. We start with the explanation, but it comes down to this concept, because I said so. Do you know what? Thank your parents, because that's one of the most valuable lessons you ever learn. And if you didn't hear because I said so or some form thereof as a small child, I'm sorry. Because that's a lesson each one of us needs to know. Because everything that God tells us to do, why are you telling me that being dunked under some water is gonna do anything to my sins? Sins isn't something that's on my skin, that if you put me under water and pull me back up, they magically disappear, right? No, that doesn't make any sense to me. Be baptized. No. Why? Because I said so. Right? We may not be able to see these things. We may not be able to understand God's reasoning behind these things. But there are some things we do because we propose it. Right? Do we have to understand everything God's told us to do? No. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's nice. But before we understand it, and let me tell you, there's some things you're doing right now, kind of because God said so or because Mom said so, that by the time you get to be my age, you go, oh, that's why I was doing it. Right? With a little more time, with a little more experience, you do understand those things. But think about the gap between you and my age. We won't tell you how many years I've been around. But think about the gap between me and you. Now think of the gap between any of us and God. Right? If God says it, it may be beyond our understanding of why. Right? Just because it's hot is beyond the understanding of that two-year-old child. Because he said so. I can't think of a better illustration than this, than that of Abraham, and when he was told to offer up his son Isaac. Here you are. God has made you this promise through your seed. All families of the earth is going to be blessed. He's made this promise to you, and you believe him, but there's this small problem. I'm 100, my wife is 90, and I don't have what? A child. I don't have any seed. So all these great things are going to happen to me through my seed. I'm 100, my wife is 90, and there's no seed. Okay. Then, God makes a miracle happen, right? Sarah is pregnant. Sarah gives birth to the child. Now God says, sacrifice. Wait a minute. Didn't you just tell me, right? Can you think of a situation that better illustrates what God would say, do it because I said so, to when there is no way imaginable Abraham could understand why he was going about killing this son through which these promises have been made? Now, in Hebrews, he's one of those great men of faith. Why? Because God said so, he did it, even though it may not have made any logical sense. And we know the rest of the story. But I want us to think, Abraham, when he did it, didn't know the rest of the story. He did know that God had promised that this was going to happen and that was going to come true. How God was going to go about making that come true, Abraham didn't know. But he did it anyway. There's not a better illustration than, because I said so, than that of Abraham. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5, bring everything. This is a conversation about self-control, right? Do you think Abraham had to bring everything into submission to make this happen? He had to battle, and it's almost as if it didn't even tell anybody, because if he told anybody, there was no way they would let him go through with it. So here he is, and he's walking up. Bring everything into submission. There's times you're not going to understand. And when you don't, bring it into submission. Mostly your mouth. Because it is from, think back to that childhood example. First you say why, and then, well, I just don't agree with that. Well, if it was me, I would do this instead of that. Nobody ever does that with their teachers at school, right? Nobody ever has any of their friends start talking about, well, if I was the teacher, I would have done this. Or if I was the principal, there's no way I would let him get by with that. Right? What's happening? We have this position of authority that said something. Childhood, these questions in childhood, why does it make sense to me? We're either going to be taught one of two things when we're a child, and that happens. One, we're going to be taught, okay, I don't like this answer that I've been given, but I'm going to do it because of respect for the person that said it. Or I'm going to be taught, before I cooperate and do anything, it has to make sense to me. How many of you have a friend that falls into that second category? Somebody you go to school with, or just somebody that you know? Maybe somebody in the room, but don't point toward them. But it has to make sense to them before they're going to have anything to do with it. I know them. I'm surrounded by them every day. Sometimes I am them. I catch myself trying to rebuke things, going, no, that's a dumb idea. Wait a minute. It may not be a dumb idea. It may just not make sense to me. This grows into arrogance as that child grows up. Because what are we taught the child to do? Everything that they're told to do, don't speed, don't go above 55. Well, it don't make any sense to me why I shouldn't go above 55, so I'm just going to do it. Well, it's not their fault. They were speeding. It's your fault for making that dumb rule because my child wouldn't do anything wrong because it didn't make sense to them. We created that situation. We've got to stop that. You've got to stop that. Every time you catch yourself doing it, because I can assure you, you do it, you've got to stop it. You've got to bring every thought into captivity. When it comes to someone who has given you a command, who is in authority over you, not in direct correlation, direct conflict with what God says, that's when you say, I'm going to bring every thought into captivity, into submission. I'm just going to do it. I may not understand it. I may understand it one day. I may never understand it. I may never agree with it. But my mom said it. Clean your room. I don't want to. I'm going to go do it because mom said it. I'm going to do it with a smile on my face. You can tell them I said that too. Good luck doing that with a straight face. But this does grow into arrogance as you become an adult. I see it. I see it in children. I see it in people your age, and I see it in adults. I see all three stages. Bring every thought into submission. Don't let this, it has to make sense to me before I'm going to obey it, have any place in your life. The second one is, do I want to do this? I got to hurry up a little bit, but I was amazed the other day. I was listening to a snippet. The guy was a psychologist. But he was talking about, I hate to hear parents tell kids, you need to clean your room. That kid, thinking of hearing that statement, the first thing they say is, I don't know about you, but I like my room the way it is. I have no need whatsoever to clean it, right? I feel no need to clean that room. The parent might need you to clean that room. But when you're sitting there playing your Xbox or whatever you might be doing at the moment, watching your television, reading your book, whatever you're doing, and you're told, stop, clean your room, look fine to me. Once again, the same thought, the same process grows into selfishness. And then it adds another layer. Now, what's people going to see? What's people going to think when they're looking at me? Right? How often is standing up for the kid being bullied or the kid being made fun of at school? How often is that cool? Anybody? Anybody seen, you know, all the people who stand up and really, that becomes the most popular kid in school is the one who stood up for the guy being put down or the guy being picked on. No, and that's never going to change. Peer pressure is going to always lean toward the things that the group, or usually one person, can convince the group to think is funny. So, as you grow up, the pressures continue, right? First, does it make sense to me? And now these pressures begin to add. And guess what? Even as adults, it just changes. It just changes. And let me tell you, there's times that promotions are decided at company parties over drinks. You didn't know it? I'm sorry to break it to you. There's times that promotions, great promotions, promotions that a person might deserve, happens in the back room at a party, drinks on the table. Guess what? You may find yourself that doesn't happen for you. Am I going to bring every thought into captivity? Am I going to continue to prioritize it up here? It will happen, and it will grow. But the thing for us to keep in mind, people make it hard. Peer pressure makes it hard. But see this guy, I don't know what he's got on his back that he's trying to carry. I like the fact that the rag keeps the rope from burning his head. But I don't know what this big package he has got on his back that he's trying to carry. God's commandments are not burdensome. We think about his commandments as, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do something else, right? All these lists of I can'ts. His commandments are not burdensome. He's asking you to be like him, the greatest man that ever lived. And you know what? You can do it. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by what? a great cloud of witnesses. We'll try that again for a little more participation. Therefore, since we are surrounded by what? Great cloud of witnesses. There are so many people who have done it, who have been right where you're at and done it. Do not tell me you can't, because I can point to a multitude who can. We can go to Hebrews chapter 11, where they point out a multitude that has. And after chapter 11, the first verse of chapter 12, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, they've done it, you can too. Not only you can, but this country, in addition to the kingdom needs you. This country needs you as well. You can choose. You can be a follower, or you can be a leader. If you're imitating Christ back into the world, with every choice you make, with every word that comes out of your mouth, every reaction to someone who's offended you, if you imitate Christ with that, you can be a leader. And you can lead people to Him. Or you can respond the way that usually that first response, that gut response, I'm going to get even with them, tells me to respond. And I can be just like everybody else. Don't believe that the leader is the one in the room that gets everybody excited to, you know, make fun of the guy, or to pick on the guy, or to do the whatever, to drink, whatever it happens to be. That's not the leader. You have to think about it, that guy is the biggest follower around, because the only thing that's important to him is being cool in front of the people around him. You want to find a leader, one who's ready to step up, that's the person who's going to imitate Christ in the crowd, where Christ is not popular to be imitated at the moment. That's the leader. You can choose to do it. You have to choose to do it. You can choose to do it. Once again, it's not about not doing wrong. It's about doing right and doing that for everybody to see. And you know what? The kingdom needs you, and the country needs you to do it as well. I think you guys are probably pretty optimistic about the way the country is to go. I always think if I was to ask you, do you think people my age is optimistic about where the country is going? You would all think no. You guys, you're a bunch of pessimists. And there's probably some truth to that. There is an optimistic versus pessimistic view between age sets. But I see the influence you can be. This country can be great. You guys are going to have to do something about it if it is. You're going to have to change some things. And you're going to have to be leaders in front of your friends in order to change some things. There was something else. Okay, good. We can make it hard. Right? We can make this very hard. And what we're going to end with today is this same concept we went back to with the small child that says why to everything. Go clean your room. Why? Do this. No, you can't do that. Why? Right? It has to make sense to me. That can destroy people. It can. It can destroy friendships. I have friendships right now that have been destroyed. Hopefully not for life. Maybe for life. But what happened was quite simply a huge division that happened, and it happened over one of the two of us saying, well, if it doesn't make sense to me, then that can't be right. And you could be doing that at home. If it doesn't make sense to me, then mom and dad are crazy and I'm not going to do it. That's the attitude. But let me tell you where it starts becoming more of a trouble. If it doesn't make sense to me, I'm not going to do it, no matter what the mayor, the governor, or the president says. You see how it grows? These laws of the land, what I should be doing as a citizen of this country, if that law doesn't make sense to me, I'm not going to do it. Now let's take it to the church. If that law doesn't make, or what the elders have said, doesn't make sense to me, I won't support it. That's the choice you have. But let me tell you, when you go home, and you say, I didn't agree with that, I'm not going to do that, that is just like the 2-year-old child that says, why? Well, that don't make sense to me, so I'm not doing it. And you know what? 28, 38, 48-year-olds, we all do it too. Emotions get involved. We don't agree with a decision that happens to be made. And instead of saying, because God said so, or because mom said so, or because the elder said so, I'm just going to step back, trust it. Once again, I'm not talking about something that's wrong based on what God says. I'm talking about a matter of opinion, a matter to where somebody's got to make a decision and I can like it or not like it. Can He govern everything about me before I step back and say, I don't agree with it, but I'm going to obey. I'm going to submit. That's when we know we love God. Do not love the world. I use the fishing lure because Satan is the great deceiver. Everything we're talking about here, these are the points that I just made. So I'll put them up for all of us to see. Satan will use everything around you. He will use your best friend. He has used my best friend. And I have looked back on situations where I found out he used me to get under the skin of my best friend and cause my best friend to do something. Right? Satan doesn't care who you use. He doesn't care if he's using a child against a parent against a child, a brother against a sister. Satan will use anything he can to destroy your soul. And a fishing lure is just like it. Looks really good to that fish under the water. We got some experts in that. In the room. That fishing lure, and they are masters. They know which fishing lure to go and take to catch the fish they want because they know what's attracted to them. You know what? Satan's the best fisherman I know. He knows what lure to put in front of you to get you a bite. And what he puts in front of me is probably not the same as what he puts in front of you. Will he get you to bite and be disobedient? We're not going to go through all of these, but I am going to put the first couple up really quickly. I had them up for a time permitted. But we asked you about things earlier. Do you see situations to where I say I love God, but my actions don't show it? I say I love God, or I go to church and here I am, I'm standing with my family, two siblings locked in arms, husband and wife locked in arms, seeing God give us Christian homes, homes where the Bible is taught and loved, right? And by the time they're in the car, mom and dad just... The love's gone. Believe me, the Bible's gone too. God give us Christian homes. Before we get out of the parking lot sometimes, the bickering, the fighting starts. If it's happened, if I'm in the car and Cheryl and I start arguing before we're out of the parking lot, does our actions match our words? We love you, God. Okay? If Anna and Lee, Anna's smiling at me, putting me on the spot, I'll smile back at her. If Anna and Lee, before they get out of the parking lot, are at each other's throat, God give us Christian homes. Does our actions, we love you, God, and our actions, do they match up? More purity give me. And when I'm out with my friends, the bottle is in my hand. I doubt we have many drinkers in this room. We could. But the good thing is, 1 John chapter 2, verse 1. If there is this disconnect between your actions and your words, I love you, God, and my actions, which again was what Jesus called a liar and a hypocrite. Right? Two words mean the same thing. If it's true, we can do something about it. Right? We can do something about it right now. Whether it's your relationship with your girlfriend or boyfriend, if that relationship exists, you can say, I'm going to be pure. You can, and you may have to go to great extents to keep that purity there. Or you can say, you can sing the song, more purity give me. As soon as I'm away and think I'm away from everybody's sight, but let me add for God's. I let emotions, whatever word you want to use for it, I let emotions get involved in my actions. Don't match. I love you, God. These are choices that we all have. What will you do with your choices? If we can in any way this weekend help you make any of these choices to serve God or to help serve Him better, we're always here to help you. There are several other places you can look at that. I ask you to go home. They're in the book. I think I ask you to write some extras. But thank you for your time and attention. Take a few minutes break, and we'll kick it back up with loving your brother through action on the hour.